Hello and welcome to Radio EduTalk. This is David Noble in Dalgetty Bay, and I'm delighted to welcome to the show this evening Libby Thornhill and Sarah Rivers. And the title of this evening's show is Open All Hours, Supporting Looked After Children and Young People in the School Environment. As ever, if you're listening to live stream, you can get in touch in two ways. You can email edutalker, that's edutalkr, at hotmail.co.uk, or you can pop something on Twitter and include the hashtag EduTalk. So just to start off with, maybe starting with Libby, could you give us a kind of brief background to your involvement with young people, and then Sarah, if you could do the same.
Okay, I'm a foster carer for Staffordshire County Council. I'm a long-term foster carer, which means that the children placed with me will be living with me, hopefully, until they're over 18. One is 15 now and one is 12 now, and they've been with me for 5 years.
So I'm Sarah Rivers and I'm head teacher of Staffordshire's Virtual School for Looked After Children. And it's a school, we don't have bricks and mortar, but every child that is in care to Staffordshire Local Authority comes under my school role, and I'm responsible for tracking their educational outcomes. So Libby has two and I've got nearly 1,000.
My goodness. Well, and so I would imagine for our listeners, particularly our listeners from Scotland and maybe further afield, could you say a little bit more about what a virtual school is then and how it operates, Sarah, and a bit more about your role as a virtual head teacher?
Absolutely. Well, the virtual head teacher became a statutory requirement for local authorities in England to have a virtual head teacher. And that came from really a kind of a lot of research and a kind of a select committee that really looked at where there were similar roles in other local authorities where somebody was really advocating for the education of looked after children. There was a really kind of demonstrated impact on improved education. So I'm the head teacher for the local authority in Staffordshire. So wherever children are placed, whether they're educated in a school in Staffordshire or whether they go to schools outside of the Staffordshire boundaries, I follow them and track them. And I'm really quite kind of positive in terms of I get pupil premium funding for looked after children of up to kind of £1,900 per child. So we're able to really look at special packages for that individual child to support them wherever they're educated. And one of the really important things that we've done in Staffordshire is we've developed a governing body for our virtual school. So it reflects almost a school governing body. But that means everybody who has a role in supporting the education of looked after children sits on that body. And we kind of challenge them about what they can do to support. So we will have, you know, a range of people from schools head teachers, social workers, children's, you know, sort of education advisory services, independent reviewing officers. So anybody who can have an impact on those child's, on that child's education is a part of our governing body. And we also have a number of subgroups that help us to really look at particular features. And where I kind of really work closely with Libby is one of the most important subgroups we have is a carers subgroup. So that's really looking at education from a carer's perspective and thinking about how can we support children in those kind of foster care or children's home environments. You know, what can we do? How can we work with them to secure those best educational outcomes? So it's really, really important to us that we have that voice. So, and we love that phrase about actually having kind of, you know, sort of caring schools and learning homes. And that's very much the focus of that carers subgroup and our governing body about how can we work together to create that learning environment in the home, but also how can we take the knowledge and expertise of foster carers about their individual children and take that into the school environment. So that's really one of the most important parts of our governing body.
And Libby, can you tell me about the partnership between the virtual school and foster carers and how the two of you are working together in Staffordshire?
I can, yes. The carers education group is a subgroup of the virtual school's governing body. And initially, when we were first set up, it was made up primarily of local authority carers, all who had a passion for education.
But then we started to think really carefully about whether or not it was a collaborative culture focused on promoting learning. And if it was a collaborative culture, then we needed to expand our membership to include independent carers, in other words, agency carers. Now, every local authority across the United Kingdom will use not only their own carers, but also if they're unable to place a child, will look outside their local authority and look for independent agency carers. We also have family and friends carers, and that is where looked after children are placed with a member of the family or with a friend. And also disability carers and what we call resilience carers. And then again, residential carers, so where our children are placed in a residential unit. So we expanded our representation to include all sorts of carers so that every looked after child had a representative on our carers education group. And then we started looking about how we could work together to actually promote education, not only in the home, as Sarah was talking about earlier, but also to take that understanding and knowledge into schools, to support schools, to understand how our young people struggle sometimes within a school environment, but how also they can fly. And so we started looking at how we were going to communicate, and we looked at our communication networks, because whilst we are a small group, we have approximately 25 representatives from across the local authority, and as I said, independent carers. We're actually representing around about 1,000 children, so we need to look very carefully about how we actually communicated with each other and how we got messages not only from Sarah and her team, but also back to Sarah and her team if there were issues that needed a review perhaps by Sarah's team as well. And we did that by our supporting groups. And each carer group will have a support group for a different area. And so there are representatives on the education group that feed back into their support groups and also back from that education group, some projects, some specific projects started to tumble out. And it was as a result of discussions with Sarah, because she sits on our group as well, and also carers who then became part of the other subgroups for the governing body. For example, I sit on the performance management group. There is also a group for early years, a group for school-aged children post 16. So we're exactly like a normal school governing body in the fact that we have representatives on each of the subgroups of the full governing body. From those subgroups came ideas, and from carers came ideas as well to try and support education. And some of the projects that we developed were carers now deliver the working with education training to all foster carers themselves, as opposed to it being training officers, because we felt very strongly that new carers coming in to look after children needed to understand what it was like as a carer at home to develop that home learning environment, and also how to work positively and collaboratively with schools. And we felt the best people to actually deliver that training was carers themselves, and so that's what we do. We also developed, with Sarah, Pupil Premium Awards, and that was to identify and celebrate schools that were particularly excellent in the use of Pupil Premium Plus to promote children's education. As a group, we started to test home learning IT software for looked after children that Sarah was considering using, so it gave her a wider group of carers to actually test the software. We developed a coding club where carers will be supporting young people and indeed their carers to learn how to code, and also a photography group. But one of the ones that we were most excited about and that we wanted to talk to you tonight about was the in-schools pilot.
So, Sarah, can you tell us what is the in-schools pilot and how did it come about?
It was one of those just amazing moments in our virtual school governing body, and we were having a conversation, you know, as a governing body with representatives from, you know, many of our schools in Staffordshire, talking about how do we make the very best use of the Pupil Premium Plus funding that we have for looked after children, and particularly around actually many looked after children need support around attachment and trauma issues and how it actually impacts in the learning environment. And it's really important that schools can understand and respond to those very specific issues. That's also been supported by the National Institute of Clinical Excellence, which talked about the importance of schools understanding about the impact of attachment attachment and trauma issues on looked after children and the difference it can make if you understand it in enabling children to learn really successfully in the classroom environment. We have many schools and designated teachers coming to very specific training that we deliver as a virtual school. But what head teachers are saying to us is sometimes that we will have a kind of a crisis with a particular child where we really need to kind of put in some intensive support over a short period of time. So, for instance, we know research tells us that if children, you know, are moving care placements or school placements, it can have a, you know, a disproportionately negative impact on looked after children. And actually, if we can put in some real support over that period, it can make a real difference to children being able to kind of get back on track and learn. But what head teachers were saying is sometimes, you know, we all know about budget cuts and pressures. We don't always have that, you know, experienced, you know, classroom assistant, that higher level TA available to support that child intensively over a period of time. Or, you know, perhaps they don't have those particular skills around attachment and trauma. So we were kind of really mulling over the issue about how do we get right people in quickly to support those children when we know they need it. And, you know, sitting on our governing body is Libby and Amanda Orchard, who's our chair of the foster, you know, our carers group, who are both very, very experienced foster carers. And they were saying, you have a bank of people, foster carers, who have undergone, you know, lots of training about, you know, the very particular needs of looked after children. They, you know, have a passion and understanding to, you know, to want to know more about attachment and trauma. Many of them themselves have an education background. Here's really, you know, a resource that we can use to maybe kind of deploy into schools on a short-term basis to support looked after children. And so really from that idea, everybody went, this is really incredibly obvious. And it, I think it really reflects, you know, we have a great respect in Staffordshire for the real skill and expertise of our foster carers, and it made absolute sense. So we thought about, let's really take this idea and see if we can develop it a little bit further. So what we started to do was think about, can we bring together a group of foster carers to think about this as an idea and think about in practice, how could it actually work? What are the logistics of it? What do we need to sort out? You know, what training might they need? How do we deploy them into schools? And we ended up putting a sort of a flyer out across our kind of foster carers in the service saying, are you interested in joining a pilot to explore this as an idea? And we had about 10 foster carers, the majority of them who'd had experience in working in education in some form, you know, whether they'd been teachers in primary, high school, some have been classroom assistants. But we also had one or two foster carers that had had no education experience before, but of course they'd had all the training of being a foster carer. And of course they're living full time every day with foster children. They're living those challenges and the joy of having kind of foster care on a daily basis. So I'll hand over to Libby, but that was really the start of bringing a group together.
It's absolutely fascinating, Sarah. And Libby, I'm wondering how you went about equipping this group of foster carers to actually be able to support the looked after children within school.
I think to start with, what we wanted to do was to look at what critical skills we were trying to develop, both with attitudes, understanding and behaviours. So the group started as a planning group with the carers who had been identified, with Sarah, our training and recruitment manager. And we had a number of meetings and discussions with regard to schools, fostering experience, our training needs, whether or not we needed a portable DBS, our CV requirements for schools, and also having a supervision agreement with our virtual schools. So in effect, Our mentoring would come through from our virtual school. Our supervision would be done by the virtual school, so that we actually needed to develop then a training program. And we wanted to also look really carefully about how we could customize it and how we could individualize each other's learning and work with each other to learn. So what we did is we set up what we thought was probably the most appropriate series of trainings. And we, over a period of about 4 months, we had some quite specialist training, first of all on ages and stages, and then a really key important one, which was about attachment in education by one of our educational psychologists, Dr. Dawn Bradley. We looked at special educational needs. We looked at managing behaviours in class. We looked at target setting and measuring impact, but we were more interested with regard to the targets being with a child being able to learn and supporting a child to become able to learn both at home and also at school. And then we looked at coping with bereavement, because sometimes some of our children may well have experienced either bereavement, and all of our children will have experienced loss. And then we looked very much at a particular program called Learn the Child. And that took place over a period of months. Following those training sessions, we then had a reflection day where we talked about, if we did this again, this particular cohort, if we did a cohort two, what would we use? What would we do differently to help us learn more? So we were constantly reflecting as we went through and asking more questions about how we could overcome obstacles and reevaluating the training that we'd actually done to try and tweak it a little bit more so it fitted exactly what we wanted. Part of the whole process was building relationships with ourselves among the group itself, along with Sarah and some of the trainers from Entrust, which is Staffordshire's training team for schools and teachers. And I think that was really part of the whole learning process for us as a whole, as the relationships became more important and as we developed the relationships and supportive relationships with each other. What we needed to do was make sure that everybody had the same level of training. And then what happened with the pilot carers who hadn't had previous experience of working in schools is they started to go and volunteer in schools just so they could understand how schools ticked, basically. And so that was the process. We worked out the program of training, then we actually undertook the training, and then we reflected on that training to see whether or not if there was a second cohort of carers, which we hope there will be, that we tweaked it slightly to change it so that it fitted our needs as working within schools.
Okay. And Sarah, I understand that there's been some wider benefits from working with adoptive parents. Can you tell us more about this?
There absolutely has. And I think Libby mentioned earlier that the foster carers have developed a working with education training where it's about foster carers working with foster carers so they can, you know, ask those questions of each other about, you know, what's it like working in an education setting. And we kind of had a meeting with some of our adoptive parents because they felt very often they don't always get the same kind of support of, you know, of a virtual school in the same way. And they'd heard about this training and really thought about, is this something that we could do and develop our own version about adoptive parents, you know, supporting adoptive parents. So Libby and I were at a session thinking about, can we kind of work together around, you know, supporting you to develop your own training? Because I think that developing capacity within communities is amazing, and building that kind of resource to kind of support yourselves, you know, you can have such a great impact. And I think it was Libby that mentioned this in-schools pilot that we were developing. And the adoptive parents said, do you know what, that's amazing. This is something that we would really be interested in doing. So we're very inclusive in Staffordshire. We just go, well, why don't you come along? And so we had about 10 adoptive parents with a similar interest in education came along to the training sessions that we developed for the in-schools pilot. And it was really interesting, the first training session, because on one side of the room was foster carers thinking, we've got very specific issues about being foster carers, and adoptive parents sitting on the other side of the room. And actually people started to have conversations about the children and the journey they've been through, you know, from their early childhood and care experiences, you know, either into a fostering placement or into an adoptive placement, and how many of the issues were still there and look the same in an education environment. You know, talking about the attachment and trauma and the issue that that has, you know, in managing that in a classroom environment. And so they started talking, and actually, instead of thinking, actually, we're very different groups with different experiences, they started really building a relationship and going, well, I've experienced that, and I've experienced that as well. So actually, during the course of the training, they really started to work together, and the adoptive parents started to talk about, actually, there are things that we could potentially do as a group, as a spin-off from this training together. So they started thinking about, you know, whether they could become, you know, almost peer mentors for other adoptive parents having been through the training. Could they develop some way of supporting adoptive parents in the classroom? And actually, in if you look at kind of some of the thinking that's currently coming out of government at the moment, there is talk about virtual schools having a greater role in kind of signposting and supporting adoptive carers. So we feel really we've kind of got there early, and we're already starting to build those relationships and build on what we're already doing as a virtual school. I think what was really nice about this process as well for the foster carers and the adopters was we were recognising that in an unfortunately high number of cases, some adoption break down in early teens due to attachment issues, and those children then return back into the care of the local authority. So if there was anything at all that we could do as a group, be it the foster carers or the adopters, to actually find a way to supporting schools and supporting placements so that the placements don't break down and the education then continues, that had to be a good thing. And that was the really exciting thing that started to come out of the relationships that we were building between each of the, either the adopter or the foster carer on this training, and has carried on since, because we've had some exciting developments since with Sarah and myself with regard to working with the adopters to take their steps, their next steps towards delivering training, but also to talk about having a document that they can take into schools or support other adopters with, which explains to schools about how their young people tick, what their issues are, and how their young person learns.
Just with that in mind, then, I mean, it's so much work has gone into this, and it's really impressive to hear about how it all seems to be kind of research informed practice and the projects that you've brought in as well. So much going on, so much kind of lead-in time and successful history there, real great infrastructure within Staffordshire and partnership working, fantastic examples of that. So where are we at just now, Sarah, and you know, what can people looking in from afar look forward to hearing about in the months and years to come?
Well, I think one of the things that we've really achieved is I think we've absolutely raised the profile of foster carers and adoptive parents within schools as being experts on children, and very often having quite detailed, you know, knowledge about attachment and trauma and what that means in an education environment. So, you know, building that kind of partnership as part of the personal education planning process for, you know, sort of looked after children is really, really important. And actually, our Pupil Premium Plus Awards that we had a category for, you know, best use of Pupil Premium for fostered children, you know, looked after children, and also adopted children. And there are some fantastic examples of, you know, where schools have really worked in partnership with the carers and parents of children to get that, you know, package of support absolutely right in the impact on education. So I think that's one of the very kind of early spin-offs of the kind of programme itself. But now, you know, we've got a group of, you know, really committed, trained people, really keen and ready to get off and get into the classroom and get supporting. So our foster carers, we're now doing that part that we mentioned earlier about getting those portable DBS checks. We're starting to identify children that could benefit from that short-term intervention, because we want to pilot that between now and the end of March so we can learn from the pilot and say, actually, does this make a difference? And work in partnership with our schools to say, actually, how did this work? Did it make the difference that we wanted? And then if that's really successful, we'd like to roll out the next cohort of training. And we're starting to think of, can we build a program such as this into a, you know, a payment for skills process for our foster carers so we can kind of widen out that network? But also, I think we kind of started mentioning about the work with the adoptive parents. So they're now looking to, you know, develop a peer support process. They've started to develop, you know, all those kind of formats to describe the issues that their children have, almost a document, like a personal passport to take into schools. They're going to be developing that working with education. But I think most important is we've kind of, I suppose, built that bridge. And the other impact is that group of adoptive, you know, parents and our foster carers have built a really strong, supportive network. And actually, I think there's all sorts of possibilities. We've been talking about social enterprises, about, I think they've got something really quite amazing that they could grow and develop. But for me, I think, you know, the more ways we can think of trying to support our really vulnerable children in an education environment. And actually, this project might work for some children, but the more projects and initiatives we develop, it's finding the right one to match that child at that occasion. So very exciting, and, you know, starting to make sure that we feed back into our governing body, you know, and they have that real oversight of what develops. And the next exciting thing is we're starting to work across boundary with Stoke-on-Trent as well, because we want to look at, as part of a, you know, an adoption initiative, is how do we bring Staffordshire and Stoke-on-Trent adopters together? And we're thinking about working with an education as a way of, you know, really developing that cross-border working as well, because there are so many links between the two authorities. So early days, I think we'd really like to come back and talk about it in the future when we've got some, you know, some very, you know, real case studies.
But where you're at the moment, you know, I'm wondering, can you say anything about the conditions that really need to be in place for something to successfully go off the ground like this? Is it to do with the particular nature of Staffordshire or makeup or size? Is it to do with a history of partnership working, or is it wider professionalism issues and a wider commitment within part of England, to making this work and to making a difference to young people who are maybe termed as marginalised or vulnerable?
I think, I mean, for me, I think one of the real strengths that I think about Staffordshire Virtual School for me has been about the strong governance that we've put in, that we've really said that education isn't just about the virtual school. Actually, we need a whole range of partners, and we've really tried to bring the governance in to be very outcome focused, to be that focus for discussion about what can make a difference. And I think we've really built on having a kind of a number of subgroups, and I think, you know, having the carer subgroup as a part of that governing body, and our governing body reports into our corporate parent panel, so it's got real clout in terms of the local authority. I think for me, that's been a real benefit, because I think you've got the right senior leadership, but you've also got people who are passionate about education across the board who can actually make a difference. And I think that's been the environment to unpick what are the issues, what could we do. For me, what do you think, Libby?
I think that absolutely what Sarah said is the thing that's made it the biggest difference. As a carer, I think part of the training that I received from Staffordshire was a social pedagogy training, and that was a four-year program that I've been involved with for that 4 years. I think a good number of the original carers on the carers education group had also done the social pedagogy training and tried to think things through on a relationship basis, and therefore for to start with, we had had that additional training on top of the normal training that you get as part of being a foster carer. And I think it enabled us to consider all of our relationships and our relationships with a virtual school in a slightly different way. And I think that that's what's made a difference. And certainly my relationship with Sarah, my relationship with other carers, with the adopters, it's all been supported and enhanced by my understanding of trying to build on relationships and seeing how those relationships can make things different for the looked after children in our care. And I suppose for me, it's the process that Sarah went through to introduce the governance, but also link that in with a very socially pedagogic approach to the way that we ran our meetings, to the way that we thought about the training that we actually needed, to the way that we reflected on the training, and then the evaluation of the training after that was very much based on social pedagogy. And I think that's probably what's made it work just that little bit better.
Well, Libby and Sarah, thank you so much for taking time out this evening to join us on Radio EduTalk. As somebody who's involved in working with looked after and accommodated children in Fife, is an area I'm very passionate about. I'm trying to get my head around the way that that you're working in Staffordshire. It appears on the face of it, and I'm sure the commitment and the drive and the intended outcomes are the same in both parts of the UK, but the way that you're going about it with this in-school support appears to be vastly different to much of the practice in Scotland. So it's definitely a piece of audio that I'm going to be listening to again, and I'll be sharing widely with care and education colleagues that I work closely with. And I do hope that you will join us again on the show in sometime in 2017, and you talked about maybe some kind of case studies. That would be fascinating to hear and have you back on for that. So thanks again.
And thank you very much.
Thank you.